This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca, home of New York's craft cider. I love New York. Plan your getaway at visitithaca.com.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. Welcome to Pizza Talk. I'm Peter Reinhardt, and today I am talking to snowy, or about to be snowy, Rochester, New York, with Luis Perez. Luis is the founder, the proprietor of Peels on Wheels, a new pop-up mobile unit that we just heard about that's getting a lot of buzz on Instagram, and we're loving the photos we're seeing. And this is my first chance to really talk to Luis and find out the whole story behind Peels on Wheels. But I know right off the start, I've got to ask you about that fabulous little truck you've got behind you. Is that one of those Peugeot Ape three-wheelers? Is that what that is?
It's called the Piaggio Ape. Yeah, so the same company that makes Vespas. So it's essentially a three-wheeled motorcycle with a truck body on it. So I fell in love with these vehicles when I was in Italy on my honeymoon. Little did I know, a couple years later, I'd be owning one and importing one from Naples, Italy myself. So yeah, it's pretty surreal to have one of these little things here in the U.S.
Are there many of these in the United States right now?
So on the East Coast, there's actually a business called Silverside Design, and it's in South Carolina, they're based out of, and they customize antique vehicles, and they actually just recently, within the past couple of years, started importing Piaggio Apes, and people are utilizing these to turn them into mobile bars or mobile food trucks, things like that. I didn't purchase mine from the gentleman in South Carolina. I actually purchased mine from a gentleman all the way out in Fresno, California.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have to drive it back?
Yeah. So how it all happened was, initially, this was not my original plan. My original plan was to get one of those workhorse, your quintessential work truck, you know, box trucks for food trucks.
Yeah, like a catering truck. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I came across this on social media, and it was like a light bulb moment, aha moment, where I'm like, I got to bring this to the U.S. So I quickly began figuring out how to get these here to the U.S. And at first, I wasn't finding any information regarding it on how to get them here. I was finding that they were illegal. So I contacted this gentleman who was out in Fresno, California, who imports them. So it was via social media that I followed him on Instagram, and I sent him a few messages, and I'm like, hey, super interested in getting one of these. What's the maintenance like? How much does it cost? Here's my name. Here's my number. He answered a couple questions, but then didn't really answer the bulk of them. So I found his website, got on his website. I'm like, hey, here's my name. Here's my number. Please give me a call. I'm super interested in purchasing one of these. And not even 5 minutes later, Peter,
yes,
this guy calls me and he goes, are you from Rochester, New York? And I'm like, yeah. Never in 100 years did I think that someone from my hometown, mind you, this guy's all the way out in California, someone from my hometown would call me to purchase one of these. And that was one of the moments where I'm like, all right, I'm on the right path. This is just absolutely more perfect. Couldn't be more perfect of a situation for me.
Right.
So, I purchased it, and I actually went on an East Coast to West Coast road trip to pick it up. It was pretty wild.
Stars aligned for you, and it seems like the signs were good.
All the signs were good. The stars aligned for me, and it was a perfect situation. And we did, it was a 21 or 22-day road trip, East Coast to West Coast, and we went across 26 states. At the time, I had pitched to the company that manufactures these ovens. I pitched an idea. I'm like, hey, I'm going on this epic road trip. I'm going to stop in some of the most scenic places across the U.S. I'm going to pack one of these and make pizzas and different things along the way. Company loved it, and that's where like my relationship really came to fruition with Gosney, and eventually turning into a brand ambassador for them. So, but yeah, it's
been impressive. Yosney's the oven manufacturer?
Yeah, so Gosney's the company. They're located in the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And they are, I think at first they were doing just wood-burning ovens, you know, stone core wood-burning ovens. They had some combo ovens where there was, you know, gas and wood. And eventually they created this, I want to say back in 2016 or 15, but it really didn't hit the mark. I mean, it hit the market back then, but it didn't really get traction until like 2017 or so. Uh-huh. And then the U.S. market just kind of took off like late last year, actually early last year, give or take, in 2019 or late 2018. And I actually got mine back in April of 2019. So one turned into two turned into four. And then
it looks like almost like a rock box oven, is it? And it's not.
Yeah, so these little ones are the Gosney rock box ovens. They'll reach up to 932 degrees, cooks a Neapolitan pizza in about 90 seconds or less. And yeah, we use the four. We use this to make Neapolitan style pizza as well as Detroit style pizza.
Well, first, I'm going to backtrack you. You were kind of driving across the country. You got an oven before you even took off from Fresno, and you set up the Ape with the oven so that you could make pizzas along the way.
So I took the oven and I stopped at Sedona, Arizona, just rented a house there, made some pizzas, climbed to the top of Cathedral Rock with a pizza in my hand just to take pictures at the top.
That's of that. Cool. Totally doing the Instagram thing there. Yeah.
Exactly. People, when I was climbing up that hill, people were like, is this guy nuts? Is that a pizza in your hand? I'm like, yeah. And So we went there. Then we went to Rocky Mountain National Park, Yellowstone National Park, camped at both those parks, then Yosemite National Park, picked up the Ape, and then hauled the Ape back. So it was really just showcasing, being able to show how versatile this oven can be, how portable it is. You can use it for camping, things like that.
So wait a minute. So you didn't even have it mounted in the truck. You were carrying the oven with you up and into the
truck. Yeah. So the road trip was really to pick up the Ape. Yeah. So the Ape was just bare bones. That the gentleman picked it up. Actually, it came to port, I want to say mid to end of August. Uh-huh. And our plans were for me to pick it up first week of September. And when I got out there, he actually is in the military and he was getting deported. So he's like, can you come a little sooner? So he asked us to come a couple days sooner. So we had to cut our time short at Yosemite National Park. But yeah, so the entire way out there was just stopping and just hanging out, enjoying the different parks and things like that.
You got to do the See America tour.
Yeah. And then pick up the truck to bring it back to the U.S. to be able to customize it.
Well, while you were out there, both heading out and on your way back, did you make any sort of quote pizza pilgrimage stops as you at places that you were on your radar?
I really, really wanted to, but unfortunately, the only place that I went to and I had been there prior was Tony Gemmiani's Pizza Rock in Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
That's the only place, but I was making pizzas myself and I was content with that.
So yeah, so you weren't on a pizza hunt at that point. You had your own.
Yeah, topic. I wish I had the time to be able to stop at a whole bunch of different places. Trust me, I have a whole list of places that I want to stop at here in the U.S., but I wasn't able to because I was kind of on a time crunch.
But you can do that. You'll do that. People will be eventually coming to you as part of their peak. The reason I asked was because, you know, we recently talked to Tom Elliott, who his brother wrote this book, who you probably are familiar with, where they also have an Ape, and they kind of built their whole operation around that, but they call themselves the Pizza Pilgrims. And yes, it all started with them going throughout Europe, you know, checking out places.
And I believe they're in the UK too, right?
They are. They're in London.
And I believe they started with these also.
Is that so? Yeah, a lot of some similarities. It's an interesting story. That's what I'm thinking. Are we on the cusp of a trend here? And are we going to see more of these?
I think these are becoming far more popular here or gaining traction in the U.S. The only thing that makes it difficult is because technically it's not a legal vehicle to have here in the U.S. because the company, Piaggio, didn't want to pay for the emissions testing for the car to be street legal. So because of that, the only way around it is a little loophole of it being imported as an antique or a classic. So it has to be 25 years or older. So mine's a 1980 Piaggio Ape. It's got about 9,000 kilometers on it. Still runs, still goes through all the gears and all that. But yeah, that's a little loophole, a way around it.
That's pretty cool. But so that there is a loophole, there's a way that people could do it if they get an older model. And, but okay, so now, you know, we know you went out there and you got it, but how did you get so into the idea of doing it. Where did your pizza journey sort of begin?
So I've been in the restaurant and hospitality industry for about 15 years in total. And in some way, shape, or form, there's been pizza along the way in the jobs that I've held.
Were you like 10 years old when you started?
Yeah, that's what everyone says. I was actually 14. 14 years old, started washing dishes in a party complex, and they were willing enough to break the rules or break the laws at the time and allow this kid to become a short order cook, eventually a pizza maker in their tavern. And yeah, I started making pizzas at the age of 14. Now, making pizzas at that age, obviously with a deck oven, you know, not safe, but I was willing to take the chance. My parents were okay with it. They knew that food was something that I was going to dedicate my life to, so they were cool with it. But yeah, from there, it just transitioned into working in some local mom and pop pizza shops. And then through my career, you know, I've worked in different facets in the hospitality industry. And I went to Wegmans grocery chain here on the East Coast. It's a popular one. And I was a prepared foods manager for them for about 2 or 3 years, running pizza and subs
for for Wegmans markets?
Yeah. So I worked for Wegmans for a couple years after the pizzerias, but I was in the pizza scene and a pizzeria for local mom and pop shops for at least a solid 7 to 8 years. And then I kind of stepped away from it, but I was still in the pizza industry, but more of retail. And I was in that for a couple years. And then I most recently actually ended up leaving, but I was on a college campus running a dining hall. And they also had a pizza program there. So it was still a little bit part of it. And during all this time, I've always made pizza at home for friends and family. And when I purchased one of these just for to have at home to kind of step up my pizza making game at home, little did I know that 6 weeks later after my purchase of this, Peels on Wheels would be born.
Well, so even though you were into sort of general food service, pizza was always sort of the thing, the light that was drawing you.
Because, like, thinking back to it, you know, I didn't realize that every job that I've held had pizza in it some way, shape, or form. You know, whether I was working at the actual pizzerias, that's where all we did. Then I worked in a couple other places, you know, being the college campus, still had a pizza program there. Wegmans had a pizza program there. So, and also I did it at home. So it's just something that kind of came to fruition that I'm super passionate about pizza subconsciously. And eventually, yeah, it was one of those things where my most recent job, I found myself with a ton of time on my hands. So I'm like, you know, I purchased this oven, came aware of like this pop-up pizza community. I thought to myself, with having a little bit more time on my hands, having a Monday through Friday job, and now that I have this more time, I can do this pop-up pizza thing on the weekends on the side. Quickly learned that it's not just a side business, then it's eventually turned into my full-time gig.
Right. Well, that's often what happens is before you realize it, you're pulled all the way in and can't get out.
Exactly. I always loved it, but it's my baby for sure.
But well, you're in New York, upstate New York. You're not far from Buffalo. Buffalo has its own style of pizza. I don't know if Rochester has a style that's its own or similar to a hybrid of Buffalo or New York style or what. Yeah. But that's not what you're doing now. You're doing Neapolitan. So what about, how did you kind of switch over to a, and you're not just doing Neapolitan. I think you're also, I'm seeing on Instagram, you're doing Detroit style. You're doing pizza Italia. You're doing all sorts of other things. But I think Neapolitan seemed to be the thing that that kind of got you in the business side.
Yeah, so I didn't know what Neapolitan style pizza really was until I purchased one of these ovens, and I was watching a lot of their content that they produce on their website, and I kept seeing more often like different Neapolitan style recipes and different fermentation practices and things like that. So I got kind of sucked in that way. And it's Neapolitan style is the best style pizza out of these where you can crank a high volume of pizzas out.
Right, because they cook so fast, yeah.
Yeah, so you can do New York style, you can do Detroit, but those take a little bit more time. So I can only do a smaller quantity of those styles of pizza versus the Neapolitan, which is our flagship style pizza. But I've just continued to educate myself on different styles of pizza. Yes, I have, you know, about 15 years of restaurant experience, but I'm just scratching the surface on pizza. I really am. And now it's become more of an obsession and trying to continue to learn and apply different techniques and processes throughout the entire thing and applying them to different styles of pizza. So it's fun. It really is a science thing more than anything.
So you're just sort of at the beginning of, you know, your own, I wouldn't say culinary journey because you've been on that for a while, but you know, the business side of your journey now, you're, who knows where it's all going to lead. But what's so cool is that, number one, the truck is unique and it's spectacular to look at. It looks like like a spacecraft about ready to take off. And also, I'm curious, where are you right now? It looks like you're inside like a commissary or something.
No. So this is actually my garage at my parents' house.
Garage. All right. Yeah, pizza garage. I see the big pizza sign.
Yeah. So they have a 2-car garage, and I obviously, because of the weather, I needed something kind of indoors, but still have able to open up some ventilation, be in the garage door a little bit. Because we are burning propane, and obviously that can be hazardous if you don't have a well-ventilated area.
Please, keep the door open.
Yes. If you see me start to fall asleep, then call 911.
You got it. We're on it. I see you've got some cold tables there, too. So do you pack those up and take them with you when you hit the road?
Yeah, so I have a 10-foot table, 2 5-foot tables, and these are actually like fully you can adjust the height anywhere from 36 inches all the way up to, I believe, 48 inches. So it can adjust pretty significantly up and down. Yeah. Main reason why I wanted these high tables is because of your back. I found myself working on these little, 6-foot tables hunched over for 6 to 7 hours on concrete, gravel, and found out, a couple hours in, your back starts to hurt. And by the end of the weekend, you're on your couch. Yeah. Like, oh man, I'm too young to have any sort of back problems. Okay. So.
It's not sustainable to,
Yes, exactly.
These
tables are actually a wooden countertop that has these collapsible legs, and they hold up to a tremendous amount of weight because they're made of anodized aluminum. And so we have these tables set up. We obviously have a tent that's set up also, and the vehicle's on the backside just like this. So the only thing we're missing right now is the tent, essentially. But this is what your setup would look like, and we'll show you here in a little bit what that looks like a little up close.
Yeah, we're going to look in segment two. You're going to show us that and actually make a pizza for us, I think, right? And
Yeah. I got some dough here, make some pizzas.
And I want to see sort of the whole thing, how it actually plays out. But one question that came to mind as you were talking about it is, did you design all this and figure this all out, or are there models that you followed and templates, say, so to speak, in Europe or somewhere where they're doing what you're doing?
Yeah, so I definitely did not come up with this model myself. This is actually something that's been a trend in the United Kingdom for many years. It's just starting to gain traction in the U.S. within the last couple of years since, the release of the Rockbox in North America.
Yeah.
There's a gentleman by the name of Adam from Peddling Pizzas. He's sponsored by Gosney, and pretty much he has this Piaggio Ape. He actually has the largest truck, I believe, and it's a diesel, what his is. And he has 2 Rockbox ovens on there. And he has the same setup. I think he's got 1 less table. He has 2 5-foot tables. But me, I have this nice 10-foot with 2 5-foot because I like a lot more space. I have a few people working with me, so I needed a little bit more space. So it's a nice little workspace. I've got a quartz countertop, custom quartz countertops that I made myself. And everything, I've started to add things, but I started to learn about different people's setup and see different things and pick and choose what I think would work well and kind of create my own using from a bunch of different people over in Europe. So I've had some guidance. As far as the truck goes, I completely customized this with my father-in-law. We tore apart the engine. We rebuilt it. We cleaned it out. We built the box on the back from our own materials that we sourced and figured out we wanted to mount 4 ovens. We did the paint job. So all in all, it's been a whole collective effort from friends and family.
Well, it's incredible. And you've got 4 ovens fired up behind you.
Yep.
That means that you can make essentially 4 pizzas at a time, or is each oven good for 1 pizza?
We usually do 4 pizzas at a time. We try to stagger them just because if you did all 4 of them right in at one time, there's no way one guy can maneuver 4 pizzas.
Yeah, you can't manage that. Yeah.
With Neapolitan style, obviously high temp baking. If you're in there 5 seconds too long on one side, you're going to have a nice charred side. So we try to stagger them, every 15 seconds or so. And then from there, we're able to work down the line and get pizzas out. So what we do is we fire 4, 15-second staggers in between. Once the ovens are emptied out, we let the deck get up to temp, and then we fire 4 more staggered across.
All right. Well, we're going to come back in the next segment and actually, fire some things up. And I'll ask you some more questions when we come back about your dough and some of your choices about ingredients and things like that. We want to hear a little bit more about now the evolving philosophy that you're developing as a pizzaiolo and and a businessman as you establish your own brand out there. We'll be right back with more Pizza Quest right after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca, helping you to plan your next getaway. Ithaca has waterfalls and wineries, art and theater, outdoor recreation, and family fun. The area is famous for its glacier-carved gorges, co-op-run businesses, and cultural influences from Cornell University and Ithaca College. Plus, you can't beat the beauty of Cayuga Lake, the largest of the Finger Lakes. Beyond 150 waterfalls and some of the region's best hiking trails, Ithaca is cider. The area is well known for its local cideries, which are leading the way in America's cider revival. You can hear from the region's cider makers directly on HRN series Hardcore. There's something really special about Ithaca's climate for cultivating delicious apples steeped in history and terroir. Let Visit Ithaca help you plan your next trip to this hub of food, drink, culture, and agritourism. Home of New York's craft cider, I love New York. Get started at visitithaca.com.
We're back with Luis Perez and in Rochester, Peels on Wheels, and we are looking at a front shot of this Ape Piaggio. What would you call it? It's a scooter truck.
Yeah,
I don't know what they call it.
It's a three-wheeled motorcycle.
Unbelievable, and with four ovens attached to the back. And so, Luis, take us through a little tour of this.
Yeah, so it's like I said, a three-wheeled motorcycle. And if you look inside the cabin, it has handlebars like a little motorcycle, a little bench seat in there. And then we fitted four Rockbox ovens on the back there, powered by propane. We've got our one propane with a hard line of gas that connects all four of them. We've got a little hand wash sink in there, you know, gray water, fresh water reservoirs. And then, like I said, three wheels, two in the back, one up front. And then this is our setup here with little cooling screen, some stuff to garnish pies with, and then we've got our ingredients there. We use Bianco di Napoli tomatoes, Caputo flour, the semolina to stretch. Got some 70% hydration dough there, and then we've got our stretching top countertop there, and this is actually quartz. They tried talking me out of using quartz because it's so heavy, and I wish I listened, but the stubborn guy I am, I wanted the quartz. So, and then this is where we hold all of our ingredients. Make my own fresh mozzarella, and ready to rock and roll on some pizzas here shortly.
So you're really getting hands on. You're pulling your own cheese there, and how long does it take for these ovens to heat up and be ready to fire out pizzas?
So I'm gonna switch this here. So it takes about, give or take, I don't know, 40, 45 minutes to get to that sweet spot of like 750. I like to cook my pies at about 850, and you can crank it up to high because there's a gas gauge on the back side of it where you could have low flame, high flame. So what I do is I leave them on low, let them get to right around 750 or so, and then when I'm ready to toss pies in there, crank it up high, and then that'll get that surface temp to about 850 or so. And whenever we don't have pizzas in there, I just drop it down to low because they will get up, that deck in there, the stone will get up to about 1,000 degrees if you leave it on high. But I would say somewhere around 40, 45 minutes or so to get up to top.
That's not bad, really, when you think how long it takes to fire up a wood fire, you know, big, thick wood oven.
This is no longer than a
home oven with a piece with the steel in it, you know?
Yeah, so this actually, it has about an inch thick stone in there. And to get it fully saturated with heat, I found you have better results if you start it out low versus cranking it up high. Because when you crank it up to high, a lot of that heat's just pumping out the front, and it's just heating the surface of the stone. So you're not going to be able to quickly get a nice turnaround, you know, within a few minutes of being able to toss one pie in, let it relax for, you know, 45 seconds to a minute, and then toss another one in. I find that the stone drops down a tremendous amount when you don't allow that stone to get really saturated with heat.
Well, that's basically, you could pull up to a site, start firing up your ovens, and then while you're setting up, by the time you're completely set up, you're ready to start cranking out pizzas.
I wish it was that easy, but our setup actually takes a few hours to do. That's one of the unfortunate things about this is because I've got so much stuff that I have to log on and off of a truck. not a truck, but I have one of those Ram Pro Masters. So we pull this on a trailer from destination to destination. And then we unload it from the trailer, get it where we want it, set this up. And then from there, we set up our tent, then our tables, linens, ingredients, all that stuff, and then the decorative pieces. So we have like an order taking table that we also set up. So all in all, with the ovens heating up and everything, you're talking anywhere from like 2.5 hours to 3 hours. So say we have an event at 4 o'clock start time, we're there by 12:30, 1 o'clock to make sure that we're good to go and we're able to fire up our orders or pre-orders that we take.
Well, this is really like pizza as theater. I mean, it's a performance art that you're doing and you're pulling up. And so it takes a few hours to get the stage ready and to get everything lined up. And then, you know, you can't really pull the trigger until all the pieces are in place. It sounds like you learned a lot. And it was what was the learning curve like in, you know, in kind of getting to this point where you've got it dialed in?
So this entire process, no matter what I've done, you know, back-to-back Friday, Saturday, Sunday, pretty much the entire summer through the fall and into the winter. And every single event, I was learning something new. And that's really the biggest thing for me in my first year as a business owner is that there's constantly challenges that you face over and over and over. And really, it's just a game of learning the entire time. And as you get into it, you get better at problem solving and things like that. But I'd say that's probably the most challenging thing is like, you can't go into any sort of day expecting it to go one way because it never does go the way where you hope it to go in a perfect world. There's always something that comes up.
So it is a never ending learning curve, of course. But it sounds like you've come a long way. I mean, from what were some of like the big learning lessons that you had during those first
So for me, I think the biggest challenge I had throughout this entire thing was when we had a pin break. This pin was very important to the vehicle being able to run. This pin came in and out of the engine and it connected to the clutch line. Oh. So in order to start the vehicle has to be in neutral. I couldn't switch the gears into neutral, so this vehicle was not running at all. And this pin, I had to figure out how to get this pin imported from Europe to the U.S. during a pandemic. And obviously Italy was shut down at the time, so we had to figure out a way, and we eventually were able to get that part sent to us from Europe, but we had to have it sent from Europe to Canada, from Canada to where I am here in New York. So figuring out all the logistics of that was very challenging, and surely enough, trying to find a part number for a 1980 antique vehicle that's foreign in the U.S., it was incredibly difficult. Do everything you can to make it happen. And that was probably one of the biggest challenges we faced. And then when we got the part was about a quarter inch too long because we had the wrong part number. So it's a part number for a newer model. So they shrunk the pin down. So luckily enough, my mother-in-law works for a gear company called Gleason Works here in Rochester. And they were able to cut the pin down and rethread it for me to be able to use it without having to go through the runaround of trying to get it from Europe again.
How long did it take from start to finish to get that pinned?
Oh, that was probably a 4-week time frame from the time that it was ordered to the time that it arrived. And then by the time we had it cut and put it back into the vehicle. So 4 weeks from the time it was ordered to getting cut and then into the vehicle.
Well, you know, I've heard it said that having a business is only 10% about the product and 90% about solving problems.
And 100%. That's 100%. It's crazy because just when I think things are going great, there's always something that comes up where I'm like, I wish this wasn't the case right now, but you just got to bite your teeth down and push through it and face adversity and get through it. I've had things where my cooler went down and I had to figure out how to get my stuff to another restaurant and utilize their cooler space. And the list goes on and on for different challenges you have to face. But like you said, it's just being able to problem solve and think on your feet. And honestly, I'm a young guy and I've got so much to learn about, you know, running a business itself and the biggest thing out of it. And I wish everything could go as perfectly, but that's just not going to happen. Now I'm just well aware that there's always going to be something that I have to sort out or problem solve.
Before I forget to ask you this, I think people who are watching, some of the folks might be thinking, they may be in the same boat where they're thinking about maybe getting into a mobile operation or, you know, something along this line. And if they have questions, are you open to having them write to you and sort of ask for you?
Yeah, I highly encourage it. I've always, you know, I get a lot of messages on social media as of late, I've noticed that the more of a following I've gathered or gotten, I start to get a lot more messages about, how did you get that truck? You know, what do you think about this oven versus that oven? And I'll get my, you know, honest opinion help them navigate and figure out, you know, what the first steps was for me in this process what it might be for them. Obviously, it varies from state to state. And obviously, I'm a little bit more, and not only state to state, but county to county, and helping people navigate through all of that and provide as much guidance as I can. But yeah, I'm all for it. You know, for me,
Is Instagram the best way for them to reach you, or is there an email that they can write to you at?
I have an email. It's contact@peelsonwheelspizza.com. Social media has been a big piece for me, Instagram and Facebook. But any of those platforms or reaching out to me directly via my email is totally fine.
Okay, so it's info. It's, did you say it was info?
Contact at
peelsonwheels.com.
Pizza.
Oh,
peelsonwheelspizza.com.
I'll put that in the narrative when we post this. But it's good to. I think you're going to start getting, you know, some messages, more messages. I think one morning you're going to wake up and you're going to be driving to a job and you're going to see like six or eight other of these on the road. You're going to, oh my God, we've got a fleet of them out there.
The biggest thing that I learned since I joined the pizza community is that it's so welcoming. You know, all these different people that I've met from all over the world, essentially, virtually, and built up these relationships and connected with all these different people. And to me, that's like the most important thing through all of this, like the social media, things like that, is building those relationships with those people to bounce ideas off of and get feedback and guidance and things like that. So I am as much a part of that, and I want to be able to make my impact on the industry some way, somehow, whether it's educational, whether it's helping someone start up their own mobile pizzeria or teaching them, you know, how to make dough or anything along the lines of that. So for me, it's all in all, it's just a very welcoming community, and I couldn't be happier to be a part of it.
It's true. It's a very generous community. It's not secretive. People are willing to share. We know that it's hard work. Everyone knows it's hard work. Everyone has their tricks and their techniques, but they know that's not what drives it. It's the passion and the commitment to hang in there when the going gets tough, and you either learn it the hard way or you go into it knowing that that's what you're facing. I think a lot of people, if they knew what they were facing, they might not have gotten into it in the first place, and then they're in and they go, okay, I'm already here. We might as well hang in there with it.
Whatever
it takes. And I can't wait till we start having these, you know, pizza expos and the pizza shows again, where everyone can gather, because that's where folks like you can connect with the bigger community and share war stories, so to speak, and again, to help each other get better and better.
And that's one thing that I really look forward to. I've never been to an expo or any conventions or anything like that.
Hopefully, the next one's scheduled for June. Hopefully, things will be open enough for us to make it happen. So before we run out of time, though, we got to get you to make us a pizza.
Yeah, no, not a problem.
It shows what you can do with these little rockets.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to go ahead and get that dough out. So I use a blend of flours for my Neapolitan style pizza. Again, I'm really new with Neapolitan style. I've only been doing it for a little over a year, so I'm constantly tweaking and learning about it. My favorite style pizza to make is New York style. And I actually was born and raised in the South Bronx in New York City. Some will say that that's the next Mecca. You know, New York City is the next second Mecca to Italy, of course. And having been to both places, you know, I've been able to taste excellent pizza. But Neapolitan style definitely is one of the newer ones. But New York style is definitely one of my favorite ones to make.
Well, we all, you know, before we had this term New York style, New York pizzeria is always referred to their pizzas as Neapolitan. And then we started to like differentiate and say, no. If it's not made in the Naples style, then it's not really Neapolitan. So really all kind of emerges from that Neapolitan origin.
Absolutely. I mean, Neapolitan is considered to be one of the oldest styles of pizza. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say New York style kind of is a variation of Neapolitan. You could consider them like cousins, if you want to say. Yeah,
exactly. I think it's really just, you know, how pizza translated when it came over from Naples and from Italy to New York and New Haven, and we're using our flour and our heating sources. Look how quickly that dough spun out for you. That's nice. So how heavy is your dough ball?
So mine's 275. This one's been fermented
about 10 ounces, approximately 10 ounces of dough.
Yeah, 275, close to 10 ounces. I use a blend of flours for it. The hydration of this one's actually 70, but I'm using a stronger bread, or not bread flour, a stronger flour, the Stagione, and I blend that, and what's the other one? Oh my goodness. Molino Pizzini. Blend those both to be able to make my dough.
You mentioned Caputo flour. You're not using Caputo flour, you're using Stagione flour?
Yeah, so the Caputo flour that I was talking about was the semolina, just a stretch.
Oh, just the semolina. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the tomatoes I use are the organic California grown Bianco di Napoli. I think they're incredible tomatoes.
Yeah, we love those.
Yeah, so I actually got connected with a gentleman here in Buffalo, New York, who runs Jay's Artisan Pizzeria. He's probably got the best Neapolitan in Western New York, and I got connected with him, and him and I became friends, and he's kind of helped me navigate through this community and connecting me with the right people to get quality ingredients. The Bianco di Napoli tomatoes are one of the things that I was able to connect with him over and be able to get, because it's not really a popular canned tomato used in Western New York. You see a lot of Alta Cucina, you see, what is it, La Bella San Marzano, and yeah. I like those are all good, but for me, this organic California-grown tomato is delicious on a pizza, just plain by itself.
But it's two different sauces there that you've got, or?
So right now, I'm going to do a marinara pizza, and then what I call the New York pizza. So my marinara is just tomatoes crushed, and then my New Yorker-style pizza, it's got a little bit of garlic in there, olive oil, sea salt, and then obviously the crushed tomatoes. So just keeping it simple. But yeah, my New Yorker, and these are probably like the two most popular pizzas that I make. And the New Yorker is actually just a low moisture mozzarella and a blend of fresh mozzarella. I do Izzo Sausage Company pepperoni on it.
Uh-huh.
And I finish it with ricotta and Mike's Hot Honey. And at first, everyone who was ordering this pizza, I would make it for myself at home, and they would see it on Instagram, and they'd pick up a picture, and they'd say, I want this pizza. So it became like a secret menu type of thing.
Yeah.
And then from there, it wasn't so secret anymore because everyone was asking for it. So everyone was asking for it, I added it to the menu permanently, and now it's part of my New Yorker pizza.
I saw a big thumbs up on your Instagram from Mike's Hot Honey, so I figured you got to be putting some of that on there. Everybody's using that hot honey, but it has become, it has tipped over big time, I'd say.
I never had it on a pizza until December of last year. I did a pizza tour with a few of my friends, and we did a pizza tour in New York City.
Yeah.
And I believe it was Pauly G's.
That's where it all started. That's where Mike's Hot Honey, you know, got its launch.
Yeah, so it was at Pauly G's in Brooklyn, and none of us had honey on pizza before. And we saw that, we loved it, and I figured, you know what, I got to figure out a way to bring this back to Western New York at least.
Right.
And
it's kind of a revelation, isn't it, when you taste honey on pizza and you go, "What? How did it take me so long to find that?"
The hot honey?
Yeah, any kind of honey.
It really just wasn't something that was being done in any pizzerias here in Western New York.
Yeah.
And now, so you only really saw it in New York City and things like that. And I had been on social media for a while, and I just never wanted to try it because I didn't believe in adding something sweet to the top of the pizza.
Yeah.
Boy, was I foolish.
Yeah, well, we all learn. And it's, Mike was in the right place at the right time. And he, now it's a national, maybe international brand.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm just going to launch this one in here.
All right. So that's the New Yorker going in.
Yep.
The New Yorker is essentially a pepperoni pizza with some garlic and and olive oil, anything, and was there something else that I missed? Some herbs?
Yeah, so it's your that New Yorker style sauce that I was talking about that has the garlic and the oregano and all that stuff blended in it. Essentially a marinara sauce.
Yeah.
And then it's finished with hot honey and ricotta.
That comes on afterwards. Okay, so we're going to get some additional cheese, and then you've got your marinara pizza, which is just real basic. So no cheese, sauce, and basil only.
Yeah, yep, sauce, basil, heavy olive oil. Just going to give this another couple seconds.
You find that with these ovens that you have to rotate the pieces?
Yeah, you definitely have to. Like I said, it's big enough to make about a 12-inch pizza, but the backside of that pizza is very close to that flame in the back of the oven.
Right.
So, as you can see, I've just got to spin this one around.
You got a lot more puff in the back, and now you've got to even it out. This is such a fascinating concept. I mean, you've taken, you know, like a pizzeria with individual ovens, taking it on the road, you know, put it on wheels, and crank out one pizza per oven. But you got four ovens, so you can keep doing them and you keep rotating them in and out.
Yeah. So usually at the pop-ups, some of our busier ones, we'll do anywhere from like 130 to 160 or 75 pizzas during the busiest ones. And that's in a 3 or 4 hour window typically. So we crank them out.
That is incredible. So that would be, let's say if you did 160, that would be 40 rotations.
Yeah.
Wow. At the end of that day,
that's about gone.
How big is your crew?
Pardon me?
How big is your crew?
So my crew consists of close friends and family right now.
Yeah.
I have probably a total of 8 different people that help me out, give or take, throughout the events throughout the weekend. And it seems like as I got busier, of course, I need more staff. So next year, I'm actually going to hire people to be a couple full-time employees as well as a handful of part-time employees. But really, this year I technically didn't really have staff, and it was just close friends and family.
And everybody worked really, really hard. Wow, those are beautiful pizzas.
So you're gonna
finish them off.
I like to add a little coarse sea salt at the end for my marinara, and then I give another heavy drizzle of olive oil because that makes a marinara pizza beautiful. And then I like to add a little olive oil around the crust of every other pizza that I make, and I do some salt, some coarse black pepper, use Sicilian oregano, and then freshly grated Parmigiano Reggiano. Mm. There.
Just to get ricotta. You said it gets ricotta too, then, huh?
Yeah. So I like to pipe the ricotta on there after the pizza's done, just because when you pipe it on before and you start cutting it, all the ricotta splatters on it. So I like it to make it look pretty at the end, and I fill the Roni cups, and I learned this trick from one of my friends, Felix Leader, who runs a little mobile pizzeria in New York City also.
That's a nice touch, really sweet, yeah.
Just makes it look a lot cleaner.
Is it straight ricotta, or do you whip it with a little cream, or what?
Nope, just straight ricotta. And then we bless it with good old Mike's hot honey.
And the whole thing just pops.
Exactly.
Wow. That's a gorgeous pizza. I can see why it's so popular. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And you could almost taste it. You can taste the flavors exploding.
Yes, I appreciate it. So, this style of pizza, like I said, it didn't always have the ricotta and honey on it. It's just I did it for myself at home, and it just gained traction from social media. And it was a secret menu item and eventually not so secret anymore.
Now it's become a signature pie for you, which is fabulous.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a lot of fun thus far, just learning throughout the entire process and what customers like and offering different specials. So for me, like whenever I do an event,
I set up a menu of like three or four pizzas, kind of keep three of them somewhat similar, you know, margarita, marinara, and the New Yorker, and then I'll throw in like a specialty pizza that I'll do something different, like a white veggie or something along the lines of that, or something unique. But yeah, that's usually what it is. A menu of four pizzas for most of our pop-ups. So
how do you get your gigs? You just decide that you're going to do a pop-up at a particular place. You have spots in mind and you let the word get out through social media, or do you have catering gigs where people call you and ask you to come and do a party?
So both. I've done private parties, weddings, things like that. But my biggest thing this year was just getting my name and my brand out there. So it was really just focusing up and partnering up with some of the most popular breweries in my county and surrounding areas. And I just cold sales, really just reaching out to these venues when I first started out saying, hey, here's my concept, would love to come down. And the pandemic's been a blessing and a curse. Blessing in the sense that all the stipulations for at least New York State and our county that were handed down by Governor Cuomo, it really helped mobile businesses thrive because they were asking for outdoor seating only. You know, they had to offer food for their guests or their customers, and a culmination of that and the beautiful weather. And I think I can count on one hand for the entire summer that there was rain, but it didn't affect us because it was either before our event started or after our event started. So really we were unaffected by that. So really it was just getting my name and brand out there, partnering up with those breweries, cideries, wineries. And then once it gained traction and got excitement, it just kind of took off from there.
Are you right now you're facing a snowstorm. It's supposed to come in any minute now in Rochester. Do you have a gig lined up for today? Or are you supposed to be doing a job somewhere?
So I decided to just kind of take a back seat, just given the nature of the pandemic right now, especially in New York itself. It's just continuing to rise, and especially our county too. The infection rates continue to rise. So I decided for the safety of my friends and family that are helping out, obviously trying to do my part to try and correct, you know, or not correct, but help the situation. I decided not to do any outdoor events or any public pop-ups and just focusing on teaching pizza making classes. So I've been doing virtual pizza making classes. And then I've also been doing pizza kits for people to prepare pizza at home. Nice. So that's been going really, really well for me. The classes, they sell out, they've sold out the first couple that I've done. And I partnered with a local business here in Rochester, New York that helps promote it. And they're kind of the facilitator of the class, and I'm just the educator. So it's pretty nice, and I set up a kit for them to pick up. The kit includes enough ingredients to make two pizzas. We actually make one with a dough that we prepare from scratch, that, you know, in a quick hour, a quick rise dough. And then I also provide them a pre-made dough that's been well fermented. My biggest thing is showing them the difference in a well fermented dough and a dough that's been, you know, quick rise with a ton of yeast.
Right.
And it blows my mind how people are fascinated with just the sheer fact of if you prepare the dough in advance, the quality of the dough goes up that much more. And everyone was just mind blown that they're like, how come the dough that was, you know, fermented longer end up looking thicker and bigger? And it's just because it was, you know, better gluten structure developed, well fermented, nice airy puffy crust, whereas the other one was a lot more dense, not too airy or anything like that. So it's neat to make that, you know, at least provide that knowledge to the people who are taking the classes and let them understand that you can make excellent restaurant quality pizza at home if you have the right tools and are using the right practices and ingredients.
Exactly. And this has been a year of educating not only ourselves, but the public and the interest, of course, in pizza, probably of all the sectors of the food service side, pizza has navigated and handled it, you know, probably better than any sector because it's so perfectly set up to be able to be flexible, mobile, and get to the people. And everybody's expecting better and better pizza. The quality and the game, everyone has to raise their game now.
And I don't know if it's just because obviously the pandemic has encouraged a lot more home baking and things like that. So I think that's part of the reason why the pizza industry is thriving. You know, I couldn't have pictured my first year to go this way. But I can't complain because we've had a tremendous amount of success our first year. I mean, I doubled my annual sales projections for the year, and I really was only in business for about five complete months. Whereas, you know, had we not had a pandemic, I probably would have been in business for about 7 months or 8 months instead. But yeah, everything has gone and played well in my favor, and I couldn't be more grateful for the success we've had and all the people who've helped me achieve the success I've had this year. So it's all in all just like a collective effort from friends.
The situation accelerated your learning curve, but listen, before we run out of time, any pizza gets cold, can you take a bite out of one of those? We want to see what
in action. So happy you asked.
I wish we could be there to bite with you, but you know, you're going to have to be our palate.
So
beautiful leoparding on the bottom of that crust.
Yep. So the deck right around 850.
That's the New Yorker. That's a heck of a slice.
My favorite slice is a marinara. Wherever I go,
I like
to add anchovy to mine. I didn't do that today, but whenever I'm making it at home, anchovy on top of the marinara is nothing like it.
Well, there you go. And it's funny how so many people, with as much as we love our cheese, so many people love the marinara and just want the dough with the sauce, you know?
Yeah. So I actually sell probably equal marinaras to margarita pizzas at my events. And I was actually blown away because in the beginning of the year I sold probably 3-4 tops during an event.
Yeah.
Now probably about, I'd say 20% of my pizzas are marinara pizzas, the other 20 are margarita, and then the remaining are specialty or New Yorker.
Anthony Mangieri at Una Pizza Napoletana says the same thing, that is his favorite is the marinara, because you really get to taste the sauce. You get to taste the quality of the sauce. Mm-hmm. I mean, we already know how good the crust is going to be and the dough is going to be, but not everybody appreciates the sauce when it's covered up with other stuff. And then you have a whole new appreciation for what tomatoes can do for us.
And that was one of the biggest things. When I went to Italy and I was ordering pizza over there, it was so simple. The pizzas on the menu were so simple. It consisted of, you know, a handful of ingredients. Focus on the high quality, because when you put too much on there, it takes away from all the other things that are on there. So, but yeah, that was one of the biggest things I learned, was just the simpler you keep it, the better.
That's right. It's sometimes just keeping it simple, and as I say, keep it simple, stupid, you know.
That's really
what it's all about. But then when you've got great ingredients and you've got, the quality of, you know, especially with a great crust, you can't go wrong. And so,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Luis, thank you so much for giving us this tour of Peels on Wheels, this amazing operation that you've created, beautiful pizzas. Those of you who are watching, check them out on Instagram, write to them. And if you're in the Rochester area, get on his mail. You got a mailing list or some kind of a.
So we haven't started that yet, but we will be doing a mailing list via our
website. How do people find you for the pop-ups? How do they find you for the pop-ups?
So we announce them. So we'll put them on our website, but we usually announce them. Not usually. We always announce them via Instagram and Facebook, and then from there we'll post it on our website, kind of all at the same simultaneously. And that's where we'll tell them, you know, Friday this date, we'll be at this venue serving from this time to this time.
Well, again, thank you so much, Luis. We're going to run out of time here, but I want to invite all of our viewers to come back. We're going to have more postings on Pizza Talk. We're with Luis Perez, Peels on Wheels, Rochester, New York. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate the opportunity. It was a pleasure to virtually meet all you guys, and hopefully someday we'll be able to meet in person, and hopefully I can make some pizza.
I can't wait to do some pizza with you. Take care.
Take care, Peter. Thanks,
good luck
guys.
In the snowstorm today.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Take care.
Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please
Join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.